Chapter 19. The Devil You Know. Passion, the fear of evil, and the evil in fear. Whatever is done for love always occurs beyond good and evil. Friedrich Nietzsche. Somewhere along the way of the evolution of mind, we have developed a compulsion to judge ourselves and others. This kind of compulsive moral judgment hijacks the natural judgmental faculty, which is about measurement, spatial or temporal balance, and navigation. It repurposes what is a mental support in mastering form, and uses it for the allocation of blame, the accusation of wrong, and the perception of evil. The system of compulsive moral judgment has possessed our mental freedom, claiming an autonomous reality that can make it feel perilous to be human. Judgmentalism can seem structural to the psyche. The judgment between good and bad has a formational impact on our energetic state. We are in its throttle hold, and the prospect of moving beyond it can seem to threaten punishment, insanity, or death. So much of our personalities, our rapport with one another, and our sense of belonging can seem to depend on it, but it starves us of the spontaneous arising of our natural passion. Yet precisely because of this strangulation on passion, passion is the quality that has the powerful, embodied momentum toward well-being that can bring release from the monopoly of judgmental mind. All the qualities of our true nature arise out of a dimension of being that is unconditional to the split between good and evil. The unconditional love that flows through us toward a child, for example, flows regardless of judgment of good or evil. The energy of peace is unconditional to the supposed split between good and evil, which is a state of war. The energy of truth also moves beyond judgment. If it were to split into the allocation of good and evil, it would not be truthfulness, but the abuse of truth. The quality of passion also charges through the artificiality of judgment, moving through and beyond the energetic twin trap of good and bad. Yet passion is commonly associated with evil. Its freedom, strength, lawlessness, selfishness, and seeming lack of care for protocol generates a nervousness around it. It threatens evil and so is received as a form of evil. This conditioning can mean we reflexively deny, suppress, and ignore the passion arising in ourselves and others. So what is this evil that can persuade us to repress our passion? Is passion indeed evil? Perhaps. When we endeavour a feeling inquiry into the nature of evil, we come upon pure pain. It is a pain so excruciating that it takes the breath away. Its potency burns out our defences. It can feel more vital, essential, and real than all our ethics. It threatens to obliterate all the qualities of true nature. It monopolizes perception, engrossing experience. There is only this timeless, uncharted, existential horror. Yet although it threatens spiritual and existential annihilation, evil is impotent. It is the scream of pain that comes with the rupture of creation. Its greatest threat is the experience of its own vibration. This is a cosmic howl of pain, the primal suffering written about as an integral part of passion. With a reflex to protect, the mind tries to grasp at whatever is deemed good and pleasurable, and to push away what is deemed bad and painful. Pleasure is tagged good and pain is tagged evil. This is an energetic association. Our experience of pain now has a flavour of aversion. It is hated, despised, rejected. Pain becomes blended with the sense of hatred and even contempt. It gets associated with rejection and death. Born in the rupture of separation, a rupture in which bliss also emerged. This part of the creative experience is now demonized. It is pure evil, and we want only good. Wherever we go to war for good, we propagate evil. When we perceive another as evil, we are sending them the frequency of pain. We are inflicting the primal pain of creation on their experience. It is a kind of moral violence through which we get an impermanent identity of being good or right. But when we espouse the blend of suffering, badness, and contempt, which is called evil, and channel it, we too are affected by it. In the words of Nietzsche, if you stare into the abyss stares back at you. In our struggle to get rid of evil, in our aversion to evil, we add the energy of aversion, of hatred, to the pain. This aversion, contempt, and hatred draws vitality from the primal vitality of pain. It seems more powerful than any mortal. It feels satanic. Our worst fear is that we will discover this within ourselves. We dread that it is there, in the unknown precincts of the psyche. We cover ourselves up with protective layers of ego and strategies of righteous distraction. But we cannot hide it, as it forms a whole mist of wrongness around the psyche. Without location in space or time, it becomes formless and all-pervasive. We try so hard to be good, to be right, to be in the light, yet the darkness is spreading from within. We desperately need a scapegoat, a villain out there to release this energy. We need an antichrist to give this inner evil a safe, external form, far away from us, a form that, like us, is limited in time and space, and so a form that can be destroyed. The villain can show up as a vindictive strain of a virus, or as an authority caught acting with cruelty and injustice. It can be classed as the opposite sex, or located in sexual predators, child abusers, and narcissistic psychopaths. We find it on TV, in world leaders, and in terrorists. We desperately seek a space to safely let our sense of evil breathe. Only then do we get some relief from the inner distress of feeling wrong. All the time we see ourselves as good, righteous citizens. The disempowerment of being right. As good people, we are victims of this evil world, victims of a perilous planet, and victims of a vindictive God that we do not believe in. As victims, we are always the good ones. Yet in our victimhood, we disown the suffering of the world and the pain in the evil. We split the experience in the name of goodness, putting the badness on one side and the goodness on the other, so that we may banish the badness. As victims, we lie because we deny the same perpetrator that as victims we depend on. For without an evil perpetrator, we cannot be a good victim. We depend on our perpetrators for our identity. In our righteous victimhood, we invade nations and occupy civilians with armies. In our victimhood, we pronounce death sentences on murderers, using murder to kill murder. We reject what is bad, and in this we propagate energetic toxins of badness and rejection. Each time we reject the badness, the pain of rejection within the badness gets more potent. We hate hatred, and in this we refuel hatred continuously. We are ashamed of our shame, and we feel bad because of it. We despise our jealousy and want to annihilate it because jealousy makes us feel bad. But now this jealousy is swelling with aversion, badness, and the felt sense of annihilation. We dread that we might be evil at the core and that this might leak out. So that core pain is now clouded with dread, the dread of being seen or felt, a dread of conscious revelation. Yet from the guts of ourselves, at the same time we so much long to be seen as we truly are. In our victimhood we victimize ourselves again and again, disempowering the psyche and denying our own source. In the words of Albert Camus, virtue cannot separate itself from reality without becoming a principle of evil. The plan to grasp the pleasure and get rid of the pain, to be good, not evil, to be right, not wrong, and to let evil be with the other is narcissistic because it is based on a deep belief in the primacy of the separate personality. It makes the personality, how it is seen, judged, adored, or rejected, the exclusive playing field of life. It glorifies and consolidates the notion of a separate self. The war between good and evil rests on the notion of separation from the whole. While separation is ultimately an illusion, the felt sense of separation, the suffering of rejection, miscommunication, neglect, abandonment, and so on, is very real. It is a living vibration of pain. It is that same vibration that when we disown it, we call evil. When we sense the selfishness within our separate agenda to get rid of pain, we campaign still harder against the outer evil, as this is blamed as the source of badness. For a while it can seem that the war against this outer evil is our deepest passion. But passion will liberate us also from the illusory split between good and evil. Passion is not caught in judgment which chooses between pairs of competing opposites, based on like or dislike, right or wrong, good and bad, and the separate agenda of the separate self. As a vertical uprising, passion brings us to the center and to the middle way. For and not against. The agenda to go to war against the other, whether it be a disease, a political entity, or a concept, comes from adulterated passion. It is a wounded agenda hitching a ride on passion's fire. In its naturalness, passion moves on behalf of true nature, not against the many forms of affliction. It will fight for freedom, not against war. It will give voice to care rather than mute the abandoned. It will bring power to love, compassion to anger, freedom to slavery, truth to dishonesty, and insight to confusion. As a quality of true nature, it relates to the true nature within all forms. Suffering is not something to be banished. It is part of the experiential fire which gives passion the vertical circulation that leads to compassion and wisdom and back to passion again. When, on behalf of our agenda to be good and not bad, we project the sense of badness on the other, we leave a vacuum within. Each act of projection leaves a hollow, unoccupied space in the psyche. This absence of consciousness where energy has been disowned also has a physical effect. Our sensitivity is numbed there, and without the flow of information through that area of the body or psyche, there is a lack of vitality. In those wounded parts of ourselves, where we have sent our inner pain to others in the projection of evil, we are disempowered. They become dispassionate, lacking real-time emotional aliveness. We feel hollow inside, and only the perception of evil in the other can stir something. Evil becomes a source of vitality and conscious awakening. We become addicted to the belief in evil out there, because only this evil awakens the sense of purpose. It gives us meaning, direction, and awakens a sense of power. We might believe we are crusading against all that is wrong, as righteous warriors, and yet we have become codependent. This evil world is the only thing that gives us identity and meaning. It becomes definitive. The same agenda to get rid of evil and be only good is now an agenda that is investing in evil, addicted to it, with devotion. Beyond the pain we inflict on others when we project evil on them, we too begin to suffer horribly in the inner world. Often we are most deeply hurt in those areas where we cannot express our qualities and talents. There is pain in the expression and pain in early and repeating experiences of rejection. For example, a boy who has a talent for sewing gets rejected by family and friends. The pain cuts him to the core, and something freezes over. It almost feels like his sewing is the cause of his parents' divorce and his father's later death. As an adult, a man comes into his office who loves to embroider. He is making a whole patchwork quilt in the lunch break. Our frustrated man-child is overcome with a sense of wrongness. It seems unfair and outrageous that his colleague is sewing in the workplace. It's not okay. He should be working. It is disrespectful and even abusive to the team. The colleague that is shamelessly sewing is seen as selfish, sociopathic, weird and offensive, lacking humanity. It annoys our man-child so much that he becomes obsessed. He wants to annihilate the activity in the present, future, and past. He fantasizes about torching the quilt. This leads to an erotic sight of himself under the quilt, having passionate sex with the offending colleague's wife. Evil thoughts! The colleague must be dismissed. The sense of evil can be triggered where others express those precious aspects of ourselves that have been shocked or forbidden. Those areas where it feels our essence has been sacrificed to outer authority. It shows up as jealousy, rage, contempt, wishing ill and distrust. Of course, we disown those unbearable feelings. They were done to us by the sociopathic other. We are victims that do the right thing. These horrific sensations are because of the other. The other is the source of this sense of evil, which means that the other is evil. In the name of the moral game. Tragically, in the name of the moral game, we try to strangle the free expression of quality. We fight to repress our talents, gifts, beauty, and quality, because this quality energy has been associated with pain. Because such quality vibrations are transpersonal, not caught in the personality, we fight them wherever they appear around us. We hurt ourselves and others out of a terrorized refusal to come to life and beauty. We pass this evil between us, multiplying its effects until the collective field becomes numb and dissociated. In the words of W.H. Auden, those to whom evil is done do evil in return. There is an innocence in the sinister pathology where the abused becomes the abuser, and the pain within it is calling out for a paradigm shift. Passion has the power to disrupt this terrible passing of the buck of pain, as passion is born of that same pain and is such a powerful affirmation and vehicle of true nature. Passion is the transformative fire that allows us to pass from one paradigm to another. With passion, we can cross the river of suffering and reach the other side. Each little move we make into the opening of the depth of the felt sense, regardless of the tired old war between good and evil, is instantly rewarded with well-being. This is because regardless of whether we sense pleasure or pain, goodness or evil, we are moving into the truth of our sensory nature. This freedom to feel, which is at first fearsome, becomes freedom to be alive. We become empowered by direct experience, graced by beauty, endowed with insight, and blessed by a passion of care. All our judgments flip over from the forbidden to the permitted, revealing the liberation of the and, or the field of infinite possibility. In the words of Nietzsche, the great epochs of our life are the occasions which we gain the courage to rebaptize our evil qualities as our best qualities. These are the moments in which we step out of the judgmental binary twin trap, and the world is revealed as a creative wonderland of multi-textured potential. The linear story of our life dissolves into a masterpiece, which is the unique and magnificent opportunity to be a visceral co-creator of the human epoch in the unfolding here and now.